Man, you need some new stickers for the back of your truck. Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. Aren't you sick and tired of everyone else being wrong about everything all the time? Well, now you can tell them all what's right with some stickers from LibertyStickers.com. At LibertyStickers.com, they're against everything, so you know they're good on your issue, too. Whether it's the wars, police state, gun laws, the left and right of the president, LibertyStickers.com has hundreds of choices so you can find just the right words to express your opposition and contempt for those who would violate your rights. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. And God dang, news is finally over. And now the show's back on. All right. Well, I'm Scott Horton. This is my show. ScottHorton.org is my website. And my next guest is Scott McConnell. He's a founding, co-founding editor of the American Conservative magazine. Available for subscription and on your newsstand. And online at theamericanconservative.com. Welcome back to the show, Scott. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing good. So your last three pieces here are really good stuff on Ukraine. So I'll be very happy to hear what you think about it out loud, I'm pretty sure. Starting with the fact that the American people, starting with the last thing you've written about here, the fact that the American people are pretty good on the Ukraine issue from a peace and liberty point of view, huh?
I have to admit that's a very pleasant surprise to me, because for the last 3 weeks there's been a media and politician, Washington politician, drumbeat about Obama being weak and feckless and Russia's attempt to essentially move against the new Ukraine government as being this huge. Threat to world peace, and it really didn't seem to me at all. But I thought when you have like that, generally people follow the lead of what the Washington elites are saying, and in this case, not at all. I.e., there was a recent Pew Research poll that said, should the United States, not care very much about Ukraine, or should we, consider a range of responses from severe sanctions to military options? And the answer of this isn't really a big deal for us was by kind of 2-to-1 margins, 55% to 25%, or among independents it was I think 62% to 25%. I mean, really fairly decisive margins. So it was a kind of surprising disjuncture between what the people were saying in response to a straightforward poll question and what the range of Washington politicians from, Hillary Clinton to John McCain was saying. So I thought that was an encouraging sign, but still the Ukraine situation is dangerous because we might do more than we need to.
Yeah, I think the way you write it here, you seem to be saying that the American people might have had the same attitude toward the Soviet Union even, except for the argument that the politicians made back in the Cold War was that, Hey, we're not just talking about a big Russian empire here. We're talking about ideological communism hell-bent on conquering the planet Earth. We must resist. And
yeah.
Under those circumstances, they were willing to have a Cold War. Fine, let's contain them then, the Americans said. But
yeah.
Without that, what do we care about what's going on in some country we can't pronounce,
It's true. I mean, I personally think that the Cold War was a big deal. I mean, I supported containment. You didn't have to fight. Like, fighting in Vietnam was not good. But I generally, looking back, am supportive of the measures we did in Europe from 47 onwards. And I think that there were, large issues at stake. But I think everybody kind of intuitively understands spheres of influence and that Ukraine is historically very close to Russia. It's not, France and Italy. It's not Germany. It's not Hungary. It's right there. There are very important, religious links between Ukraine and Russia, and it's right there on the doorstep. So what does the Russians think when we have one of the top neoconservatives in the State Department is essentially in Kiev a month ago, basically picking who the ministers would be of a new government in Ukraine. I mean, I can't imagine that they would look at that as like benignly, and they haven't.
Right. In fact, here's that clip real quick, or part, a piece of it.
Economic experience, the governing experience. I think Yats is the guy who's got the economic experience, the governing experience. He's the guy, you know, what he needs is Cleach and Tawny Book on the outside. He needs to be talking to them four times a week, you know.
Anyway, so that's the tone of the thing, is Victoria Nuland, the Assistant Secretary of State for Europe, which is, I gather that's basically the ambassador to the European Union, Scott, is that about right?
Oh, she's the, the guy he's talking to is the ambassador to Ukraine, and she's the Assistant Secretary of State for European Affairs, which is probably the top official dealing with Europe in the Obama State Department, and from what I saw, you know, Kerry and Obama were pretty much engaged with other things, so she would have a lot of leeway in forging European policy.
Mm-hmm. And they're talking about Ukraine like they own it. Well, we're going to do this. You know, I don't like this one guy. I would rather have the other guy. The guy who, by the way, was just meeting with Obama in the Oval Office yesterday, the new prime minister, Yats.
Yeah.
Her pick.
It's the first time I've heard the tape, actually. It's good that you have it.
Oh, really? Oh, I'll send you all the clips. I won't waste your interview playing them, but I'll send them to you.
Victoria Nuland is the wife of Robert Kagan, who is one of the most important neoconservative foreign policy writers. He co-writes a lot of things with Bill Kristol, and he's one of the sort of ideological engineers of the Iraq War, among other things, but of a generally very assertive, aggressive American foreign policy to begin with. And I assume that Victoria Nuland and Kagan see these things eye to eye, and they, you know, they basically think the Europeans are a bunch of wimps because they care about, you know, economics and vacation more than they care about power politics. And so here she is, I mean, right really on Russia's doorstep, you know, trying to organize a revolutionary anti-Russian government. And it's extraordinary to me that Obama could let that happen, or that Kerry could let that happen, because I tend to have a think that Obama and Kerry are a little wiser than that, but they did, you know, and here we are.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you call this in one of your articles here, this entirely self-inflicted Ukraine disaster. I talked with one writer who thought that maybe their offer to Yanukovych was deliberately so bad that he would have to turn it down and tilt back toward Russia, all the easier to foment a coup. They would rather have a deal with the next guy than a deal with the guy they didn't like, that kind of possibility. And yet all they really succeeded in doing was, I mean, even for the time being, they control the government in Kiev, or their friends do, but it looks like they're going to lose Crimea, which is what they're after in the first place, right? Or somewhere.
Yeah, I honestly don't know what's going to happen. I think it's tricky for Russia to take Crimea because it isn't really linked by land. So if you want to, like, trade with Crimea, or you want to supply it with gas and stuff, you have to go through the eastern Ukraine. And I'm actually worried about what might happen. I mean, we've made it into, rather than sort of our policy should be, Ukraine should be a kind of neutral place between the West and Russia, and we understand that Russia cares, like, a lot about what goes on there. Our policy had been, let's take Ukraine away from Russia, move it to the West, and make it part of our alliance structure. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it's not easy to divide the country up. I mean, I don't really have answers, but it's not going to be like Russia's going to be able to just take Crimea, I don't think. I think that's geographically a little difficult, because Crimea is not connected to Russia except through, well, like, these straits and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Well, although in the east, it's just in their bridge there, or it's just a very small hop.
Know,
they could build a bridge pretty easily.
They could build a bridge, but, you know, a bridge is not, I mean, they can build a bridge.
Right.
But,
I mean, it's closer than the Florida Keys are to Florida, and they got a bridge there.
Yeah.
Saudis rolling tanks into Bahrain, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, Russia can, you know, can certainly militarily control Crimea, but the eastern Ukraine, which is, I think, somewhat more Russian-oriented, certainly more Russian-oriented than the western Ukraine, is in play. There's now, like, you know, headlines in the Times, at least this afternoon, about a lot of Russian troop activity on the borders of eastern Ukraine. I don't know true, not true, how true, what it means. You know, I don't think that this, I mean, we, it seems to be gearing up into like a major crisis. I don't, and yeah. It would probably be not a good thing to have a major crisis about. It's certainly an area infinitely more important to Russia than to us. And I think we have a real national interest in having, like, calm relations with Russia. I mean, there's, you know, that's...
Well, yeah, I mean, to have a border dispute this far from our border seems a little strange to me. But, yeah, I want to talk with you about some of the interests that we have with the Russians and just how important in the scheme of things those interests might be compared to who rules in Kiev. More with Scott McConnell from the American Conservative magazine when we get back from this break. Just a minute, y'all. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. I'm talking with Scott McConnell. He's got a great first name and a great little magazine over there, the American Conservative Magazine, home of the anti-war right, theamericanconservative.com. And we're talking about this disaster, this building disaster in Ukraine. As Scott was saying right before the break, reports are that the Russians are mobilizing troops near the eastern border of Ukraine, and I guess that would be the next move on the chessboard if Putin wants to make it, would be seizing East Ukraine, and I guess Obama would have to just take it. But what if they took the whole country? Wouldn't he have to do something about that, quote unquote, according to power politics in Washington D.C.?
Well, there's not. I don't think you would have an intentional war about that. But I actually don't think that would happen. But even, you know, troops in the eastern Ukraine is likely to get everybody very tense for a long time.
Right.
I don't want to be overly alarmist. I'm just, like, reading the headlines in the New York Times on the web. I don't have a...
I don't like being alarmist either. I mean, it seems to me like Putin's already winning in every way. Last time we did a coup there in 04, all he had to do was wait around a couple of years, and then he got this guy in. And now we've couped him again, Yanukovych, but... You know, he'll have another, especially like if you're saying maybe he doesn't run off with Crimea, then he'll have another chance at the ballot box in a little while, assuming they keep holding elections over there.
Yeah.
I mean, and, so why blow it? Why go so far as to even have any level of war, proxy or otherwise, over there?
I think it's hard for the Ukrainians. I mean, it's a very divided country, and I think it's hard for them to have... elections where they, you know, even remotely agree on much common ground between East and West. I mean, I've known just Western Ukrainians like who are completely disdainful of the Russian Ukrainians. Anyway,
Yeah, it's almost like the Sunnis in Iraq call the Shiites the Iranians, even though they're not, they're Iraqis, but they're the Iranians.
No, I guess Putin, he's quoted this once telling George W. Bush, you know it's not a real country. And I don't, I mean, and Bush, I mean, who knows? I don't know what a real country is. But I think that the Russians don't think of Ukraine as a real country, probably.
Yeah. Well, so I don't know. Talk a little bit more about, and you've written about this at the American Conservative too, Scott, about, well, what interests do we have at stake? What makes it so important that we get along with the Russians, other than the fact that they have H-bombs? In other words, you know, when it comes to picking on somebody our own size, they are. And so we better be careful about that in, you know, in the worst-case scenario sense. But what about everything else we got to work with them on?
Well, first, Afghanistan. We have troops in Afghanistan. We're going to have them there. They're going to come out, I think, fairly soon. But they are at least, I think, a lot of their resupplying, and I actually don't know the percentage, comes through a Russian base in, Ulanovsk or somewhere like that. Somebody can correct my Russians, but it's Lenin's birthplace, actually. But that's, you know, the main non-Pakistani supply conduit. So to get stuff in and out to the remaining American troops there. So, you know, if we decide to get really, really tough with Russia over, Crimea, then, you know, maybe that base won't be supplying them. Now, I guess the American troops could get out through Pakistan, but that might be, I can imagine that would be costly in lives and certainly more expensive, but perhaps bloodier. And I'm sure that the American commanders of the American troops in Afghanistan do not want to see their access to resupply through the Russian route cut off. Secondly, there's dreadful things going on in Syria. It's not, I don't know, you know, it's difficult to say whose fault it is, but I think there's a common human interest in seeing the extent that great powers can cooperate to stop a civil war. It requires Russia and America being kind of on the same page rather than thinking, you know, it's a, you know, whatever, you know, is good for me is bad for you and vice versa. But if you make a Cold War situation out of it, it's going to be a humanitarian disaster for Syria. Thirdly, Iran. It's kind of interesting. I think Russia and America both are on the same page with Iran. There are probably people who welcome a more of a Cold War attitude between Russia and the United States over Iran, because it might make the United States more hawkish or more supportive of Israeli military action or things like this. I'm being pretty speculative here, but I think Russia and America have a joint interest in, or had a joint interest in, bringing Iran, you know, back into the family of nations and kind of regulating and supervising or overseeing its nuclear program and not ending it. And so that ends, and Russia and America are at odds over Ukraine or something like that. Then it makes war more likely in the Middle East. Those are 3 points I would make. And just generally speaking, I think, Russia is a big, great power, and I don't think there's any innate hostility between the American people and the Russian people, nor do we have huge conflicts of interest that are obvious. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it seems like if you run a hawkish think tank, then okay, yeah, it makes great sense to, you know, try to relive your Cold Warrior days and all that. But if Pat Buchanan can put in writing and come on this show and talk about how, oh, Russia, yeah, well, you see, Russia is not the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union is dead and gone, and their military, the Red Army, does not exist, and they do not occupy the dozen nations on their periphery that they used to occupy, and those days are gone. We do not have to have this kind of conflict. If that's good enough for Pat, that ought to be good enough for anybody on the right or left or anywhere on the political spectrum in America, right?
Pat is absolutely right about that. But there's a lot of Cold War nostalgia I think people in Washington often need to feel important and need to feel that they're, you know, engaged in a big, you know, earth-shattering, world-important conflict to justify, you know, whatever, you know, their decision-making, their getting up in the morning. And so there are a lot of people in Washington, not just Republicans, who welcome, at least a low-level Cold War with Russia. And the idea of just thinking Russia's a great power on the other side of the globe, with whom we have no major conflict of interest, is anathema to them.
All right, now, we're real short on time. I guess I want to ask you about Robert Perry's theory that, you know, when you talked about all those interests Ukraine, that Ukraine is messing up, but especially Iran and Syria and our cooperation with Russia being important on those issues. Robert Perry over at Consortium News seems to think that This is, you know, amounts to some insubordination by the likes of Victoria Nuland and some of the neocons, and that they are doing this particularly in order to drive a wedge between America and Russia while we are in the middle of negotiating on Iran and Syria. These two very important issues for them, and they're getting revenge on Putin for making the chemical weapons deal that prevented the direct intervention into the war in Syria last summer, and they're trying to screw up the Iran nuclear deal, which is yet to be finalized. Yep. What do you think of that?
Yes. I think that's plausible, and I hadn't heard that theory before, but I think it makes a fair amount of sense, and I'd like to read and think more about it. Certainly, you know, Victoria Nuland doesn't operate in a vacuum. She's part of a, you know, kind of large neoconservative policy network where they kind of, you know, think and act a lot and coordinate in certain ways. And insubordination. You know, she should not have been allowed to have been in Maidan Square in Kiev, you know, choosing ministers.
And that's my word, really, by the way, you know, summarizing Perry. I don't believe he used that term exactly,
yeah.
So I should be careful about that.
Yeah. No, I think that's an interesting theory, and it's a line of speculation that we should be hearing more about, depending on what happens in the weeks to come.
Real quickly here, I guess we have about a minute and a half. Can you talk about the difference of opinion between the Europeans and the Americans about how to proceed from here? I think you write that the Germans and the British apparently are much less enthusiastic about ramping up this conflict and adding new sanctions, et cetera.
I mean, so far, when you talk about sanctions, you talk about, Britain has major, like all the Russian oligarchs, or a lot of them have decamped to London and bought a lot of properties,
right,
and are very involved with the financial system. And Germany gets a very, very large percentage of its energy needs in terms of Russian natural gas. So they are definitely not eager for, let's have a new Cold War. It would come at financial cost to them and not necessarily to us.
Right. Yeah, they can steal more over the long term if they let these guys stay. I get it.
Yeah. But I don't think they're comfortable. I mean, I think they definitely wish that this hadn't happened, you know, starting from, you know, when. And they are in part responsible for the overreach of trying to, you know, bring Ukraine into the EU. That's their somewhat assertive step. And I haven't actually seen some analysis whether they think that, you know, whether Angela Merkel, who should understand Putin pretty well, they come from similar backgrounds, thinks that, you know, maybe, you know, they shouldn't be, like, trying to woo Ukraine away from the Russian orbit. Anyway.
Right, we'll have to stop there. Thanks so much for your time. I sure appreciate it, Scott.
Thank you, Scott.
All right, everybody. That's Scott McConnell from the American Conservative Magazine. He co-founded it, theamericanconservative.com, on Ukraine. Cool the triumphalism, our entirely self-inflicted Ukraine disaster, and push for a new Cold War seems to stall. Thank goodness. Hey, y'all, Scott here. Ever wanted to help support the show and own silver at the same time? Well, a friend of mine, libertarian activist Arlo Pignatti, has invented the alternative currency with the most promise of them all, QR Silver Commodity Discs, the first ever QR code 1-ounce silver pieces. Just scan the back of one with your phone and get the instant spot price. They're perfect for saving or spending at the market. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one. That's scotthorton.org/donate. And if you'd like to learn and order more, send them a message at commoditydiscs.com or check them out on Facebook at /commoditydiscs. And thanks. Don't worry about things you can't control. Isn't that what they always say? But it's about impossible to avoid worrying about what's going on these days. The government has used the war on guns, the war on drugs, and the war on terrorism to tear our Bill of Rights to shreds. But you can fight back. The 10th Amendment Center has proven it, racking up major victories. For example, when the U.S. government claimed authority in the NDAA to have the military kidnap and detain Americans without trial, the nullifiers got a law passed in California, declaring the state's refusal to ever participate in any such thing. Their latest project is offnow.org, nullifying the National Security Agency. They've already gotten model legislation introduced in California, Arizona, Oklahoma, Missouri, and Kansas, meant to limit the power of the NSA to spy on Americans in those states. We'd be fools to wait around for the U.S. Congress or courts to roll back Big Brother. Our best chance is nullification and interposition on the state level. Go to offnow.org, print out that model legislation, and get to work nullifying the NSA. The hero Edward Snowden has risked everything to give us this chance. Let's take it. offnow.org. Hey, y'all, Scott here. You like coffee? Me too. Hey, if you're a true connoisseur, you need to try an amazing new roaster out of L.A., Tonks Coffee. These guys are fanatical about delivering the best coffee beans in the world. They get the beans directly from the growers, roast them, and then ship them to you within 24 hours. They're as fresh as can be. Tonks is a subscription-only service, and they're offering a free sample to listeners to this show. Give it a try. If you like it, you can sign up. Then every 2 weeks, you get a new batch of incredible coffee beans roasted to perfection. If you're hitting the cafe or drive-thru most mornings, this is a better and more economical way to get great coffee. Go to tonks.org/liberty. That's tonks.org/liberty. Hey, y'all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way, the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world, except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon.